Welcome to another episode of Managing Change on Internet Blog Talk Radio, your host, Ronald Allen. This is home for truly engaging conversation. Managing Change brings you an eclectic perspective on issues that affect you, the individual, the family nucleus, careers, business, and that entrepreneurial spirit that is uniquely American. And yes, a word or two about life's perspectives on managing change for that human touch that drives us to unique heights of accomplishment. Carve out the time every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. for Managing Change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen. Now, also here at www.managingchange2.com. Internet radio at its best.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Managing Change. And I'm sure most of you have already realized that we are having our bit of challenges with today's program, but I'm glad to say that my guest, Mr. Nicholas D'Antonio, he is the program manager from the Manufacturing Institute, will be on our line along with his partner, Mr. Michael Machetti, who is the program manager for New Jersey. And as you know, we're doing a series of interviews for the advancement of manufacturing. And I just want to find out, Nicholas, are you on the air?
I am here.
Thank you very much. And Michael, you're there, I see. Good afternoon, Michael. Okay, I see you on the dashboard, but as I mentioned, we did have some connectivity issues. Tech support is working on the background. So I'm going to move forward with today's program. And as many of you know, manufacturing has certainly changed. It's no longer individuals wearing hard hats and steel cap toes walking into rather hazardous environments at 5 o'clock in the morning. And my two guests, Mr. Nicholas D'Antonio, he is, as I mentioned, the program manager for the national initiative, and where I believe it's called Dream It, Do It, and his partner for New Jersey, Mr. Michael Machetti, he is the program manager for the New Jersey initiative, and we're going to be speaking with them momentarily. Just to let you all know, a shout out to my alma mater at Prior Park College, Bath, England. I've managed after 2 years. So when they talk about stick-to-itiveness, focus, and persistence, that's what it takes. I'm going to be interviewing the headmaster, Mr. James O'Connor. He will be on the program, I believe, on the 22nd of February. We're also, of course, reminding you of the Alliance Mid-Atlantic Conference for Suppliers on March the 31st in Atlantic City. It's been held at the Bally Casino Hotel. So without further ado, Nicholas, can you give us a broad overview of the Dream It, Do It program? And then I'm going to ask you the role that the Manufacturing Institute plays in making this a reality.
Absolutely. And Rodney, thank you so much for having me on tonight. A little bit of background about the Dream It, Do It program. The program was launched in 2005 by the Manufacturing Institute as a response to declining perception among youth in terms of manufacturing careers. And the goal of the program was to position manufacturing in a positive light to a critical mass of students across the nation. But over the last decade, the program has greatly evolved into greater than just a messaging program, or a broad-based messaging campaign, and into a program that focuses on stronger career exploration activity for students as we attempt to expose them to careers in manufacturing. The Dream It, Do It program currently operates 42 programs across 40 states in the U.S. And reached about 430,000 students nationwide last year.
Excellent, excellent. I understand we were the 41st state to be involved, or 37th. Let you correct me. To be involved in the Dream It, Do It program.
Yeah, New Jersey was the 37th state to join. Yep.
Excellent. Michael Machetti, are you on the line at this time? Okay, he may be having some issues with connections. We will have to revisit him momentarily. So, Nicholas, you are the program manager. I see that your credentials certainly support your role. And in looking at your picture, the youth that you represent coming into the program, the longevity of building it out for the future, I think it's appropriate that they chose someone of your caliber. You are a Project Management Institute certified credentialed individual, I believe.
Yes, sir. I am a project management professional from PMI. Yep.
Yeah, and you came out of the Kogan School of Business at the American University. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Definitely. I did. I attended American University in Washington, D.C., and specifically their Kogan School of Business, which is a growing business school and becoming a nationally recognized business school at my alma mater. Kogan was great at not just preparing students to have the academic-based knowledge needed to enter the workforce, but then also to have the on-the-job training and preparedness that we needed to be successful. And actually, that's a unique parallel or alignment to the work we do here at the Manufacturing Institute, where much of what we promote and encourage is this idea of skills and competency-based learning, and really this concept of work-based learning and on-the-job training as some of the best preparation an individual can receive, specifically for manufacturing. Well, I was fortunate enough, because of the Kogan School of Business and my opportunities here with the National Association of Manufacturers, to have a very similar experience, which I'm able to apply very much to my work with the Dream of Do It program as well. So I'm very fortunate to be an American University alumnus and have enjoyed my time here in D.C.
I trust you get a good chance to travel the country and see some of the programs in the various states.
Yes. For the last 4 years, I've been very fortunate to just about cover all 50 states across the nation with my travels, much of which have focused on how we have been able to build these Dream and Do It programs into really successful and robust career exploration activity and program at the community level. Part of what makes the manufacturing industry and the manufacturing community so unique is that no matter which corner of the country you find yourself in, there is a manufacturing base that's supporting that community and supporting many members and citizens of that state. And what I think has been so fortunate for me is that as I've been able to travel and experience the unique types of manufacturing in each corner of the country, you also then get an idea of the type of people who help to make that community thrive. And when you apply a program like Dream It, Do It, part of what we need to focus on is how we are reaching youth in different regions of this country. Those travels have really been able to shed light and support the Institute's greater mission at strengthening this program and making it even more applicable for those types of communities. So very fortunate that way, for sure.
Absolutely gives you a very broad national view of what's going on in the industry, what business owners are looking for. Before we bring Michael Machete back in, I believe he's now on the line. Nicholas, I just wanted to ask you, what can you give us one or two examples of the concerns in these communities, and then how have your program been able to address the youth initiative? And I'll qualify it this way. Back in 75, I know it was a long time ago, England was devalued, the pound was devalued, and the economy was in shambles. There was massive recession, there was massive unemployment. I happened to graduate at that time, and I could not find work, although I did end up in a shipping company as the captain's mate, which is not on the ship, but rather on dry land, where I did a bunch of accounting and dock processing functions. So what are some of the challenges that you've heard out there in these states? And then how has the program begun to address these concerns with the youth?
Certainly, and I would say that we hear two common challenges that I would say are relatively universal regardless of where you go here in the country. One sits on the industry side, one sits on the academic and the way that we are preparing youth for careers. And on the industry side, it's universal that there is a lack of qualified, skilled workers. There's a lack of a skilled and technically skilled workforce available to our nation's manufacturers to fill mid-skilled or entry-level positions in maintenance, in production, in technician level roles. So on the industry side, we hear that concern quite often. And it very much does relate back to the challenge we have on the academic side in that are we preparing today's young people for a goal that might not be achievable, which is a four-year post-secondary academic pathway that leads to some type of great career that exists out in the marketplace. The challenge is, though, that many students are not prepared for four-year post-secondary academic opportunities. There is a considerably high cost to those types of programs, and often what we find is that even when students are able to graduate out of those programs, they are not always able to find employment in the workforce that aligns to what they studied, or that will be able to, you know, kind of keep their heads afloat in terms of being able to pay off their debt and maintain, you know, daily living expenses. And community students across the country, we hear in all communities, are experiencing these types of challenges. Part of what Dream It Do It tries to position is that past high school, a four-year collegiate degree is not the only outcome a student should consider striving for. Associate degrees, two-year degrees, or industry-based certifications, which take less time, require less investment, can have a just as prosperous outcome in terms of employment in careers in manufacturing or other trades that could position a student or a young person to be successful for years to come, and at the same time also kind of address the challenge in terms of manufacturers in their search for skilled talent. So those are some challenges that we hear, and Dream It Do It positions manufacturing as a response to that challenge for both industry and for students.
Absolutely, and interestingly enough, globally, that has been some of the major challenges both with the youth and the seasoned worker because of the shift in knowledge base, because of the shift in how we process from raw material to manufacturing to delivery. We used to talk about 3-4 years ago on the program how the competency of someone, even in a Kmart, have not been intimidated by these handheld devices. Many people are literally pushed aside because of that, so I do appreciate that feedback. Michael Machetti, are you on the line?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Yes, Michael. How are you? Good evening.
Good. How are you?
We have our challenges, as we say on the program, Managing Change. It is how you handle the disruption, excuse the pun in PMI terms. Nicholas, you'll appreciate that. Disruption challenges the individual. And Nicholas, I'm going to ask you, Michael, excuse me, I'm going to ask you a few questions here. But I need to preface today's challenges in starting the program because I was in the post office this morning and they had 3 new employees being trained. And you would be amazed at the feedback of the seasoned post office workers being disgruntled because it disrupted their mental flow of working with customers. So we've had our challenges this evening. Nicholas has been gracious to be on the line. Michael, you've just joined us. Thank you very much. I know you've had a few challenges there. Michael, the question that I wish to ask you, because you've come from that 4-year college, you went to onto your graduate work, you've been steeped in the old regime of a worker's expectation of finishing academics, then transitioning into the work environment, and you've been very fortunate. I want to touch on your entrepreneurial acumen a little later. But right now, how do you view the mentoring that you can provide the youth for the New Jersey program that you manage, and yet at the same time morph into this new beat that we're having to really step up and realize that things change quickly. The youth don't listen for 45 minutes at a time. How have you addressed that in bringing your skills to this initiative?
You know, it's interesting. There are very nicely framed question. It is certainly a challenge, especially with young people, and especially with young people being brought up in today's technological environment. It basically amounts to selling. We have to sell our young people and their parents / mentors and the educators into the notion that there's a broad vista of things that people can do, that young people can do, and it is important that they find something that excites them, that floats their boat. And hopefully, Ron, it's not Gilbert and Sullivan's HMS Pinafore. I heard your story earlier. but it's important for children to find themselves, and Dream It, Do It is one quintessential way to do that. It gives them the opportunity to experience something that they would not normally experience at all, not even come close. And we just had an event very recently, a couple days ago, which was called the Dream It Do It 500. We partnered with the New Jersey Library Association out of Piscataway. And this event had students in the high school level coming in to a design challenge. They had no idea what that design challenge would be. It turned out, as they walked in, 25 students, we split them up into teams, six teams altogether, and we asked them to design a rubber band powered car. And you could hear the gasp in the crowd, and the kids started, you could see their faces change, one from, you know, gee, this is going to be interesting, to a very focused look. And there are some elements to this program that we can talk about later. It's great. It's very, very interesting. And these kids zoomed in and totally focused on building, designing, constructing, and marketing this vehicle. It was wonderful. It was the first time that many of them ever had any kind of a challenge like this. At the end of the day, when we had a chance to talk to some of the students, they were as enthralled as their faces expressed earlier in the afternoon. And it's programs like this that gets people, young and older, to appreciate some of these other elements to education, to career building, and to life. And that's really what it amounts to.
I'm glad you mentioned the exercise the students went through, because if you haven't, I'm sure you've all been reading the last week, Tesla just came out with a new car that can go some 250 kilometers, which has broken all records on cell-powered vehicles. So the term dream it, do it, as they say, the rubber does meet the road. When you bring that skill set to the dream, or dream to the skill set, and you can deliver. So that's excellent, and certainly rubber band powered vehicle is an excellent exercise in physics, chemistry, just in and in thought process, you know, what is that, inertia, movement, all of these come into play. And when I was going through the website you guys have, it's so, Nicholas, you have an incredible website there with the Manufacturing Institute. Your advocacy, your going to legislation and saying, look, you know, this is going to help our economy, this is going to help our youth, this is going to help our truancy. You know, let's get right down to the nitty-gritty, right? I had the opportunity to interview Mr. Raymond Vaccari, the director of the state, and he said one of the issues was having the kids come on time. In my day, you were not late, because the first time you were late, you were chastised physically. There's no doubt about it. So let's kind of quickly move off of that. But I need to ask you, since the children are, and Michael, you said you have to sell the children. Absolutely. You have to sell the youth. You have to sell middle-aged people. You have to sell older people, because life doesn't end until you're 6 feet under. And even then, maybe you'll just keep on moving a little longer without knowing it. But to that point, when we sell the children on this, is it that we give them the chance to be engaged and create and therefore support their efforts, and then show them how it can become a reality or become commercial. And how does that differ to the traditional forms of education that we have in schools and in and even in jobs? And either one of you can answer as we go forward.
Michael, do you want to take a first crack and I'll follow up?
Sure. The kids really have a tremendous capacity to experience new things. Soft skills, which is this issue of, you know, arriving to work on time, being a team player, able to communicate, soft skills are the most important element that employers view as really being required of their employees. The employers have said to us many times that if you get someone here who has these soft skills, who's a team player, who's a problem solver, who acts on their feet, who comes to work on time, positive outlook, if you have someone with all those qualities, I can teach him the rest. If you don't have those qualities, the outlook is unfortunately somewhat grim. So we're constantly reinforcing positive habits with our young people, and it's really been, you know, been quite effective. But it's something that you don't learn overnight. It's something that you really have to work at over time. And it's quite a challenge. It really is.
Yeah, you know what? If I may add, yeah, I think one piece, and I guess I can speak from a little bit of personal experience as well, is I think that one piece we've gotten to a trend of both at the secondary and both in secondary education and in post-secondary education is this idea of holistic or liberal arts-based academia or teaching, which I think for a long time we viewed as an approach to create the well-rounded individual, which is important and has its place in education at all levels. But part of what we want to move towards, and I know Ronald, you had mentioned a bit earlier about, you know, part of what we do in terms of advocacy. You know, part of what we want to start to strive for is how we prepare students at all levels, whether they're adult learners at a community college or whether they're, you know, high school freshmen entering some sort of career and technical education program, how what they're being taught can actually be applicable and applied in the workforce and once they reach the marketplace as a job seeker. It's no longer valuable to have students who enter into a ninth grade, you know, shop class learning how to do, you know, basic woodworking when local manufacturers might have part-time job opportunities for those who have some basic CNC machining skills. And the same applies really at any level. And I think that this is something that we, you know, the Manufacturing Institute as a 501c3 organization does not play a role in advocacy or lobbying for specific policy, but we do some work around educating those who do have that type of voice. And part of what we like to encourage is that concepts like industry credentials, dual enrollment programs that are very specific and skills-based can go a long way in a community in really preparing students to enter the workforce, having the soft and employability skills, as Michael alluded to a little bit earlier, and some of the more technical skills needed by local manufacturers and by other local employers. I will say, Ronald, that one piece that we hear far too often from our manufacturers is that, you know, if an individual comes in and they show up on time and they pass a drug test, we'll take the rest of the training from there. And that's an incredibly low standard for our manufacturers to have for any type of position. Our high schools and our community colleges can do a great job at preparing a technical workforce, but it's going to take a lot of different players helping those institutions prepare the right types of courses, which that's where a policy environment can be supportive, that's where our manufacturers can be supportive, and that's what the Institute looks to promote as well nationwide. We can do a lot to help prepare that workforce moving forward, and that's a change we'd like to see in education across the nation.
Let's talk a bit, a little detail. We spoke a bit about competencies. We certainly spoke about the academics, skill sets. What areas, both vertical and horizontal, are students exposed to? Is it delivery? Is it raw material manufacturing? Is it finished product process? Can we go in and kind of identify specific skill sets that they're learning and then talk about the delivery of that learnt skill in specific industries? So if it's an Amazon environment, if it's a Tesla environment, if it's a Campbell Soup environment, what would they be bringing to those job opportunities?
Well, Rana, I will say that this is where strong relationships between our employers and our partners in education, that's where these relationships can have such an impact. Because I'll bring forward, you know, some examples. I wouldn't say that the students who go into these manufacturing programs at the high school or the college level are getting into the depth of technical preparation that you just spoke to. A lot of what you spoke to will likely be taught on the job because those skills will be unique from one manufacturer to another. Manufacturers are simply looking for some sort of foundation of competencies and skills that will make an employee or make a job seeker or an applicant, you know, 40-50% of the way there where they can take the rest, not starting from ground zero. So in many places, what manufacturers have done is come together, you know, in a consortium type environment to start to look at some of the common positions that they might share and look at some of the baseline competencies that are commonplace across all of those open positions. And then that type of language and that type of information provided back to the local schools really do help to prepare a proper workforce. So you might be looking for, you know, individuals to come in, and some of the skills, for example, that they might be prepared for are things like basic practices in safety, quality practices in measurement, you know, general information around manufacturing processes and production, general information around maintenance awareness. That's the type of basic skill set that manufacturers are looking for any job seeker. And then depending on the technical skill set, whether it is welding, whether it's CNC machining or industrial maintenance and mechatronics, then there's an expectation for specific technical skills and technical competencies in each of those areas. But more often than not, the manufacturers are defining it based off of their greatest need within their facilities and what's commonplace across a community, and then communicating it back to the training providers, which often take the form of a community college or a high school.
You know, one of the other...
Yep. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, you know, one of the other elements to this entire discussion is one of, you know, society continues to move on, and more things are developed, more and more things are discovered, but our educational system from kindergarten through 12th grade has been the same for over 100 years. There's a lot more to learn now. And where this rubber meets the road, it's being often in the manufacturing realm, it's being dumped in the laps of the manufacturers. You're bringing students up to a certain level, which is when one looks at the broad exposure of the world's knowledge, the level that the children are brought up to today is a fraction of what they were brought up to 30 years ago. And that's why programs, and I think you've had the opportunity to speak with Ray Vicari and Ian Trammell, programs like MechaForce are specifically addressing those issues in a very, very positive way, where we are attempting to nurture young people to the point where they are marketable, where they can come out and continue their education where the public education has stopped for whatever reason. Cost is probably the most significant reason. So it's quite a challenge.
We're speaking with Nicholas D'Antonio. He is the National Program Manager for Dream It, Do It, and our resident New Jersey manager, Michael Muschietti. You're listening to Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Why do I listen to Managing Change with Ronald Allen and guests on blogtalkradio.com? Because I get to hear somebody else tell their story that relates to me. Issues, changes, and accomplishments that affect my life. Whether you're experiencing a career change, going through a family discussion about change, or an entrepreneur navigating the changes in your industry, Ronald's guests share their stories about winning. They bring solutions to bear on your issues. They get me answers to today's challenges in life. That's why I listen. blogtalkradio.com. Search Managing Change in Managing Life's Changes.
certainly are managing change on Managing Change Tonight, as we've had our share of initial disruption. Fortunately, my guests have understood that. They're still with us. We're speaking with Mr. Nicholas D'Antonio. He is the National Program Manager for Dream It, Do It out of the Manufacturing Institute, and also our resident expert, Mr. Michael Machetti. He is the Advanced Manufacturing Talent Network Manager working out of NJIT in Newark, New Jersey. Today's program, What's So Cool About Manufacturing Anyway? Well, what is so cool is that we're taking the youth's energy, the youth's interest, and in most cases, their desire to learn, to be engaged. And that is what change is all about. Nobody wants to necessarily change. On the other hand, when you invite them to be engaged, that sets up a whole set of other parameters and certainly opens up possibilities. Nicholas, let's talk a minute. I see that you also have a report here. And again, correct me if I'm giving wrong numbers. 47% of manufacturing is made up of women. 27% is women specifically in high-tech areas. What's the difference? What's the subtle difference in inviting women as opposed to men? Because my thinking is it's all intellectual capital.
Right, and we would agree, and unfortunately the data has shown that when it comes to the workforce in the industry, there's some balance in terms of the greater industry as a whole, but when you start looking at positions in engineering-related roles, in production and technician-level roles, the percentage of women in the manufacturing workforce is significantly lower. I think that, Ronald, a lot of the challenge that the industry has had has been a lack of role models or a lack of faces for the industry that are female driven, and for young women, statistics have shown that by as early as third grade, young women see less opportunities for themselves than their male counterparts in STEM related pathways, science, technology, engineering, and math. A lot of this has to do with the way that we put forward and present the industry and put forward and kind of demonstrate what STEM occupations are all about. Far too often we catch ourselves in having a male face for the industry, or even in simply what type of pronouns we use in terms of referring to the general he or that works in manufacturing. A lot of what we've done at the Manufacturing Institute to address this concern, because we do consider women to be an untapped talent population for the manufacturing industry, is how do we start putting forward a greater number of role models in all levels of positions for manufacturing through an initiative that we call Step Ahead, which is science, technology, engineering, and production for women in manufacturing. And over the last several years, we have recognized several hundred women who have made a significant impact on the manufacturing industry, honored them with an award in Washington, D.C., and then asked that they become female ambassadors for the industry towards young women who might consider pursuing careers in manufacturing and STEM-related pathways. And, Ronald, if you don't mind, I'll share a very quick story.
Yeah, Nicholas, I just want to interrupt you 1 second.
Oh, sorry.
Nicholas, can you just tell us again, you said Step Ahead is an acronym for science, technology,
engineering, and production.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to get that down. Thank you.
Absolutely. And there's more information about the Step Ahead program on the Manufacturing Institute's website, which is themanufacturinginstitute.org. We've recognized women from across the country, including in the state of New Jersey. But I will give a quick story that we've experienced. One of our headline events in the Dream It, Do It program is a program called the Making It Real for Girls Summit, which is a one-day program for middle school young women to participate in to hear from female professionals about careers in manufacturing. And part of what these young women were tasked with, they typically are about 6th to 7th grade, is they are asked when they come in at the beginning of the day to draw a picture of an engineer. And then they're asked at the end of the day to draw a picture of an engineer. And the difference is that where you see at the beginning typically scientists who are men, at the end of the day you see professional women as the result. And that's the type of perception that we want to change in the eyes of young women, is that there are so many opportunities for themselves, not just to be successful in manufacturing or STEM-related careers, but to be leaders in these fields as well.
Michael, you, again, coming back to your field of both the academic and the corporate environment, you branched out into entrepreneurship and opened up a host of franchise food, fast food restaurants across the country. Do you see the potential of some of these youth, once they have this mentoring and coaching, do you see them possibly coming out with ideas that they can come back into the market as entrepreneurs or even as inventors? Have any shown that inclination?
Yes. One of our events, we had a young woman, BJ Dowlin, who has invented a product, and we were able to get involved with her very early on in her effort, and we've been watching her progress through all the trials and tribulations to finally get to a marketable manufactured product, and now it's finally hitting. And this, she spoke to our young students during this Dream It Do It 500, and when everyone left, and she spoke for about 20 minutes or so during lunchtime when the kids broke for lunch. After the event was over, everyone was going to the parking lot. Half the kids followed her in the parking lot to talk to her more about it. There is, you know, one of the great, great things about this country is that you do have that possibility here more than anywhere else to become an entrepreneur and to experience failure as well as success. And how to handle both is an important element as well. But the horizons are broad and limitless with these programs.
I'm sure, Michael, you've heard about the federal government approving the $50 billion, if I'm not mistaken, for education and infrastructure to help with the education nationwide, and a $2 billion of that for specific subsidies to help with students to go to school. Does this help the efforts that New Jersey is doing to bring community colleges on par, not just nationally, but globally, so that these types of programs can continue and be supported?
You know, I am not familiar with the details of those programs. You know, like anything else, the dollar numbers are huge, they're impressive, but it's the mechanics, it's the detail. Do those dollars make it to the programs to actually make the difference that we need? And I'm just not able to address that. I do know that you know, certainly having opportunity, having programs like Dream It, Do It lead the way to have children exposed to these nuts and bolts and to really pique their interest will make those dollars go a lot farther and the success will be much, much better.
Absolutely. And Nicholas, you know, you mentioned that you do get a chance to travel the country. You've able to hear the pulse of what's going on. What's the noise like for the parents who maybe in some cases had given up but now see some opportunities? What do they also want to be part of this, or do they simply encourage their children to seek a better path, as most parents do?
I think that it's definitely a combination of both. In some places, you know, I've been to a number of communities where other industries have experienced, you know, significant layoffs, and as a result, you know, when we're communicating our message to a student population, you know, we're also speaking to a parent population that may be out of work or transitioning into new employment, and they hear about the opportunities and how rapidly or how quickly you can move into a career in manufacturing through a community college accelerated training program or through a program at your local workforce board, and as a result, they're as excited potentially for pursuing those types of occupations. In some cases, they are simply excited because they think that now there is a path forward for their children. And, you know, one of the pieces of noise we hear frequently is a concern that manufacturing jobs may be, you know, the first ones to go. And a lot of what we're working on with this parent population is about rebuilding trust that the manufacturing industry is not just here to stay, but it is here to stay, but it's also expanding in communities across the nation with fantastic opportunities for young people, not just in terms of their compensation, but in terms of being able to grow within the organization and continue to pursue education as well. So I think that we see a combination of both, but overall, when adults better understand manufacturing, they are and data supports this, they are much more likely to encourage their child to pursue a career in the industry, and that's been a positive path forward for Dream It, Do It, and for the Institute in our efforts.
Michael, you know, I've always said that there's no such thing as a generational gap, just a communication gap. And on the Dream It, Do It website, I'm looking at these visual pictures of kids with radiology machines, on robots, on all forms of mechanisms that either bring pieces together, assemble, manufacture. I was with 1330 Innovation in Delaware about 3 or 4 months ago, and they are part of that 3D printing now in retail stores, that copier. It's incredible stuff. So
right.
Talking about our age, I'm up there with you. And looking at how the youth, again, you know, they want things quickly. They want things immediate. They need to be tactile. They're very experiential. What do you see in the next 5 or 10 years that these types of programs and the students going through them, what will they look like? What will they morph into? Will the students be able to begin to craft other opportunities? Will the programs supported by the Manufacturing Institute create new venues?
Boy, you know, looking into the future, I wish I had a crystal ball. I do know that that the more things change, the more they seem to be the same. Children are not all that much different today in terms of the basic building blocks as they were when you and I were kids. I see the same things excite them, the same things motivate them, and the key is to really address their interests, to understand the individual. And, you know, the future is a tremendous place, and our children will be leading us there. I think one of the areas that will become a major problem, as well as having some innovative solutions, is that of sustainability. It's great to make all this stuff, but from where? Where does the raw material come from? When we were kids, a car bumper weighed about 80 pounds, and now they weigh less than 10. It's this kind of material processing, this innovative thought, this change in physical design that these young people will really be excelling at. And sustainability, I think, will help to shape this future.
Okay. Looking at the issue of income. Everybody wants to know, okay, well, what kind of income ranges can a student expect once they come out of the program? And benefits, national, international reports always show salary, benefits, and support are three key ingredients in employees wanting to work with a company. What's that makeup like, and what's the future for those going into manufacturing?
Well, I can speak from at least a national perspective. Ronald, I will say that we're always careful at the Institute giving specific salary ranges, just because it really does change depending on what community you're in. It could be the same role, but on average, the manufacturing employees make the highest compensation in terms of salary and benefits of any other industry in the country, which is something that we are very proud of as manufacturers. And additionally, what I think is important to consider when we talk about compensation is that manufacturers of all sizes, small to large, are committed to education reimbursement and continuous development for their employees, no matter what position you're at. We find that to be a commonplace for manufacturers. And often, to start working for a manufacturer, potentially an entry-level role that could be paying somewhere between $15 and $20 an hour, the amount of education needed, the amount of prerequisite training, is significantly less, and as a result, the costs associated with that training is significantly less. So that is one of the major benefits that exist in terms of pursuing a career in manufacturing. And frankly, you know, manufacturers seeking high-skilled welders who are very capable at their jobs, who might hold an industry credential. Those types of individuals could easily be making six figures in the right market with the right manufacturer. So the opportunity to be paid well is certainly there in the industry.
And also adding to that, the opportunity to start at a minimum wage job, pay scale, and progress through with on-the-job training efforts is really very much unique to the manufacturing industry. I visited a manufacturer today, and I was looking at a young gentleman. He was probably around 20 years old, and he was sweeping the floors and moving products from one place to another, and he was making minimum wage. And I spoke with the operations chief at this company and asked what his future was going to be. And he said he is going to become one of those. And he pointed to a CNC operator who makes substantially more. And with innovative and dedicated employers, the sky's the limit with these young people. And if you were to take manufacturing in the United States and carve out that economic sector, it would be the ninth largest economy in the world. And there's nothing but really positive future, certainly with manufacturing.
So looking forward, Michael, in New Jersey, what events are coming up this year that both employers, parents, and their student children could attend and get a better view of these opportunities?
We are working on several Dream It, Do It best practices, and there are a host of them. One that we're working on currently, rather vigorously, is called What's So Cool About Manufacturing Video Contest. And this is essentially the task of individual schools, set up individual teams of 5 to 6 middle school students, and they create a video that's 2.5 minutes in length. And they go to a manufacturer, and they record what they think is so cool about that particular manufacturer. And it's really fascinating because it encompasses many elements that a young person is interested in. Certainly the manufacturing aspect, the detail. They come in and they interview employees at the company, so they have this personal touch. And then after they film all this raw footage, they get involved in the editing of the piece, which gives the student a chance to express themselves in an artistic fashion. So it's a really wonderfully rounded program. We're hoping to have 8 schools enrolled with a due date for the video the first week of June. And I am still taking applications for middle schools on this, so they can certainly reach out to me. I just had 2 more sign up with us today. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And this was a best practice that came out of Pennsylvania and Karen Buck's Dream It Through the Pennsylvania group. She's been wonderful, very strong supporter of all of our efforts. And there will be
Michael,
other programs as well.
How can they reach you, Michael, to be part of this?
Yes, they could reach me by phone is the easiest way, and that's area code 201-306-0173. And I'd be more than happy to talk about it.
And I know from the website, is it manufacturingnj.org?
It's manufacturingnj.org. And then on that website, you can click on Dream It, Do It. Our kickoff for our website is actually occurring the end of this week. Our marketing specialist, Janine Kroner, has been working diligently on the project, and we're all set to launch the end of this week. So it would be manufacturernj.org/DIDI/, and just enter it, and you'll come up to our space.
Nicholas, what? You, as a young guiding shepherd of the program, having the tentacles in the communities, both families, youth, what would be one of your takeaways or legacy that you'd like to see this program achieve?
Well, I'd like to think that as the program continues to evolve nationwide, that every student, every American student, this is my ideal goal, has an opportunity to be exposed to the world of manufacturing, and at least be able to put some consideration behind what an opportunity in the industry might be. On a greater scale, where I'd like to see the Dream It Duo program lead is that students all over the nation have an equal opportunity then to participate in one of our career and technical student organizations, which are actual in-school kind of career simulator opportunities, programs like Skills USA or DECA, which I personally have had experience for as a DECA student. I know how those types of programs can really help a student understand what their path might be forward. And if I could see any great result, it would be Dream It, Do It supporting greater exposure for manufacturing to students all over the nation, which we're doing right now but can certainly grow, and also making sure there's greater access to those types of simulated work-based learning activities so that students really understand what they're passionate about and where their future might lead. So that's what I'm hoping will be the result of the program's growth, you know, over the next whatever amount of time, and I know with great partners like we have with Michael and the New Jersey team, we are certainly within grasp of reaching that goal.
Just a little facts as we wrap up today's program. We've been speaking with Nicholas D'Antonio. He is the National Program Director for Dream It, Do It out of the Manufacturing Institute. He is a certified Project Management Institute carrier. He has extensive work in the field and is an advocate for youth engagement, employer participation, and academic excellence so that our manufacturing environment can continue to grow. And in that respect, I just want to kind of wrap up the program. In the most recent data, manufacturing contributed about $2.17 trillion to the U.S. economy, and that is up $1.7 trillion from 2009. So in general, the industry sector is healthy. The vast majority of manufacturing firms in the United States are small. You know, we speak about small, mid-middle market companies here on Managing Change. And the recent data shows that there are 256,300 firms, give or plus or minus, in the manufacturing sector, and about 3,600 firms considered to be small, less than 500 employees. Again, speaking to the strength of the middle market companies supporting our economy. There are about 12.3 million manufacturing workers in the United States, accounting for 9% of the workforce. These numbers are important because when you go into a career, when you go into an industry, whether you're starting a business or a career, you want to seize potential growth patterns. And what I'm realizing with the two gentlemen that I'm fortunate enough to interview today, Nicholas D'Antonio and Michael Machetti, is that we have not a generational gap, rather a willingness to link, mentor, coach, and drive an initiative that can help the baseline of our economy. As I mentioned, 1974, 75, the English pound was devalued, massive recession, massive unemployment. Well, here we are many years later, and based on where you are in the world, these same economic pressures could either be a positive or a negative. And it's gentlemen like this that have helped us find some solace in the last 10 years have been very, very difficult across most economies, the shift of labor, the shift of skills. Nicholas, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate your being on our program.
Thank you, Ronald. Appreciate it.
And Michael, I think your skill set speaks volumes of connecting that so-called youth disconnect with the need to have to be mentored, and shown that the older generation, us as older members of our society, do care and can reach back and mentor students. Gentlemen, Nicholas, I'll start off with you as you're the National Program Manager. Any closing comments? And then Michael, I'll ask you to wrap up our show.
Great. Thank you, Ronald. No, I just wanted to thank Ronald and, of course, Michael for inviting me to join us today. You know, we think that there is great opportunity in the manufacturing sector for youth across the nation, and we will continue to promote and help young passionate minds pursue careers within our industry. My request to those who are on is that if you yourself would like to learn more about manufacturing, please do visit themanufacturinginstitute.org to learn about the industry and how you could potentially play a supportive role in your community, because everyone does have a role. And I will wrap up by saying that I myself Ronald, I don't think if you might not know this, but I am also a New Jersey native as well. I grew up in New Jersey. I know the great work that's being done by Michael and the team up there, and excited to see the progress that's been made in my home state. So, again, thank you so much, and I'm happy to be with you all today.
Thank you, Nicholas.
And Ron, I'll tell you, the Dream It Do It program has been outstanding. Manufacturing Institute, very responsive to all of our needs. Nick specifically has been wonderful. If we need something to happen, call Nick and it happens. And the other thing I want to say for a moment is what a neat place New Jersey is. I had several meetings last year in spring, and one particular day. My first meeting started in Newark, New Jersey. I then had to go to the farmlands of southern New Jersey for my second meeting. Beautiful, beautiful wide open spaces. My third meeting was at the shore of New Jersey. I took my shoes off, rolled my pants up, walked on the beach, froze my feet. It was in March, but it was fun. And I concluded my day watching my son play baseball at 7 o'clock at night, a block away from a beautiful view of New York City. New Jersey is a wonderful place. We have our challenges. We have an outstanding workforce. And we're looking forward to doing better and better.
Amen.
I'm glad you framed it like that, Michael, because we came out of Essex County initially, went to Warren, came down to Mercer, Burlington, and Gloucester, and we found that it literally has all of those environments and sceneries and vistas. Gentlemen, thank you again for joining us on Managing Change on Blog Talk Radio, and we wish you the very best with your work.
Same to you. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you very much, Ron.
Thank you very much, Ron.
You have been listening to Managing Change with your host, Ronald Allen, on Internet Blog Talk Radio with guests providing their perspectives about you, the individual, the family nucleus, your career, your business, and your entrepreneurial spirit, life's perspectives about managing change. Join Ronald and guests every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. for another episode about managing change on internetblogtalkradio.com. Remember, the program is now showcased on managingchange2.com, where you can search for your favorite guest interview or get in touch with them and start a chat, enter their forum, or start your own public or private group to engage others in managing change. Catch Managing Change Internet Blog Talk Radio.com. Search Managing Change every Tuesday and Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. Be seeing you.